My name is Michelle Choi, and this is our Oral History Gentrification Podcast, brought to you by Connect the Pod and the Chinatown Library Teen Council. We had the chance to sit down with Phyllis and Tanya Ling from Stop the Gondola, and me and my fellow interviewers,
Caleb Leon,
Malia Mahalona Janokan,
learned about the proposed gondola in Chinatown. We hope you learn as much as we did from our two guests, Phyllis and Tanya Ling. 我们开始吧。
To start us off, Phyllis, would you like to tell us more about yourself and your backstory?
Well, we grew up in Orange County. I moved to the downtown area in 2007. But then a few years later, we were trying to buy a house. We finally found one after years of searching every weekend. And we found a house in Chinatown. And we bought it in 2012.
Here, I'll give you the history. My sister was born in Atlanta. I was born in Taiwan. Our parents are from Taiwan. Yes, we grew up in Orange County mostly, did all our schooling. Sis went to Harvey Mudd for her undergrad and then Texas A&M for her master's. I went to UC Irvine for undergrad and CalArts for my master's. We were both hanging out downtown, in and around downtown before either of us moved here. And, you know, downtown was very different 20 years ago. Very, very, very different 20 years ago. And then, yeah, sis moved downtown first. And then I followed. And even though we looked at houses in a lot of different neighborhoods surround in downtown and surrounding, we were always very excited when a home popped up for sale in Chinatown. And that was not a frequent thing. We were coming out of the recession that happened around, what, 2008?
2009.
Yeah. So housing prices were still kind of depressed at that time. That's partly why we were able to get in to the game, but just barely. We didn't have like that much. The world was not our oyster, you know? So, but at that time, we were able to at least look in neighborhoods besides Chinatown. But we chose Chinatown. Chinatown didn't choose us, you know? It was always kind of a cool community, and we're like, oh, we're Chinese, you know? It's like, that might be interesting for us. But also because it was very walkable, there was a nice mix. I love that we live on a street that has a lot of seniors, you know? To me, that's very interesting to have a mix of generations. And up until very recently, there were young kids living on our street as well. And it's very walkable. We could walk and hang out in Chinatown. It was very convenient to do things downtown and near downtown, which we were doing a lot.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So our next question is delving into the Stop the Gondola project. What exactly is this initiative and what motivated you to initiate it?
Yeah, so this is Phyllis. Yeah. Okay, actually, I need to go back to 2018. I actually did see it in the news. It was like in the local news on TV. There was an announcement about, oh, there might be a gondola between Dodger Stadium and Union Station. I think Mayor Garcetti announced it. When I saw that, I was like, well, I wonder where they're going to put it. Because they didn't say. It was just kind of a conceptual thing that they announced. So, you know, a couple years went by. Didn't really hear anything about it. And then they announced they were doing the environmental review for the project. And I guess a little bit before that, I mean, I'd been getting involved in the neighborhood councils like around 2017. I was just like attending meetings and trying to learn about what was going on in the community. And I got a little bit familiar with some of the processes. And like, I've heard of environmental reviews before. And like, to me, it seemed very weird that they were starting with that as the first step for this project in terms of doing any outreach. It made me very concerned about what was happening. And that was generally the message we were getting, was like, this project is happening. You can't really stop it. And, you know, you probably shouldn't waste your time. So that really made me upset. But it also made me want to like try to share information with folks. So that's why I started a website, the Stop the Gondola website.
Can you talk a little more about what this initiative is trying to do?
So it's proposed by the former owner of the Dodgers, Frank McCourt, to build an aerial transit system that's sort of like a ski lift, the kind with those cabins, very big, fancy ski lift between Union Station and Dodger Stadium. It's sort of like at Disneyland, too. It's like an amusement park ride, but they're proposing this as transit.
Just to give you a little bit of of scale, there would be 52 cabins, each one about the size of your living room that would hold 40 passengers each. That's not even the worst detail, but also Frank McCourt was forced to sell the Dodgers in bankruptcy in 2011. There's a whole history. You could do a whole episode on that. But yeah, so he's a billionaire developer trying to build this gondola project that is a fixed route. It only goes 1.2 miles from Union Station to a private sports venue. They, for years, have been promising that it would be privately paid for. No public dollars would be at stake or anything like that. And that it was going to help our community. It was going to help the businesses and help our residents. You know, we can ride it every day as if we all need to go to the stadium, especially on the days when the stadium's closed, because they're not saying, oh, we just want it for game days. There's 80 some odd game days plus some concerts every year. They want to run it 365 days a year between 5 a.m. and midnight. Why? We know why, but I think we save that reason for later. Huh?
To give us a sense of scale, how would the gondola look like in Chinatown? And how would it impact the Chinatown community if it gets constructed?
So between these towers and stations, so there are three large stations. One that sits above Alameda Street between Union Station and Olvera Street. That's called the Alameda Station. It's about, I believe it's 78 feet tall. And then there's another station at the entrance of LA State Historic Park. That one would be 98 feet tall, take up the whole entrance. That southern entrance, when you walk into the park, there's this open plaza there. It'd take up that whole space, but it would sit high above the ground. And then there's another station at the Dodger Stadium parking lot on the very edge of the parking lot. And then there's also this, what they call a junction or non-passenger station. And it's very similar to a station, but they're using it to allow the route to make a bend, because normally gondolas can only travel in straight lines. So there's one of those in our residential neighborhood. It's called the Broadway Junction, and that one would be 98 feet tall and would basically sit in our neighborhood. And a big issue with these is that gondolas, you know, you can kind of imagine if it's flying up above you, you might not hear very much, you know, but then near the stations, that's where you have a lot of noise. And these gondola stations would be running, as they said, starting at 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. is when they get it up and running, and then 6 a.m. until midnight for passenger service. And these stations will be constantly circulating cabins through them. They have machinery. The motors are centralized in the stations and in the junction to pull these cabins very long distances. And these cabins would each be about 5 tons fully loaded when you have the people in there too. So they're very large cabins. It's a very large system. And it's been a huge struggle trying to explain the project to folks, because you really need to go into a lot of details and, you know, show images help too. And so that's part of the reason for the website, is to try to get more of that information out there. That's to make it a little bit more accessible to people so that they don't have to comb through like an 8,000 page document to try to learn about the project.
I feel like it's very sad that seniors have to go through a lot of noise pollution caused by the gondola. And since it's from 5 a.m. to midnight, I feel like the seniors could be sleeping or enjoying their daily activities and just having to listen to the gondola, which is like 40 feet above the ground, very close to their homes.
Yeah, and continuing with that, when you walk down like Broadway or Hill Street, a lot of Chinatown is made up of like these low-rise buildings, maybe like 2 to 3 stories, and nothing really more than 5 stories.
Yeah, they have these towers proposed. And if you go and look at the documents and at the drawings, they show them leaning over the street because they're trying to build the towers on land off of the street and not take away traffic lanes, but then have the gondolas lean over the street so that the cabins are flying over the street instead of over a building. Yeah, they're trying to market this as a tourism benefit to Chinatown to fly very high. They've actually taken the lowest route they can for this project, it seems, because they're where they go high, they're trying to avoid things like the Metro Gold Line or Metro A-Line rail. So they're trying to avoid certain obstacles, but the project actually flies very low. For example, only 26 feet over LA Historic Park at the lowest point, flies directly over a hill where a lot of people like to gather and play. It's like that first hill you see when you walk into the park, and it's on the left sort of, and a lot of people like to gather. You know, you see kids playing and rolling down the hill, people sitting there with their dogs. So this project actually flies very low, also low over our neighborhood. So only 49 feet over our neighborhood. So we'd be, you know, sitting in our backyard and looking up at the gondola cabins.
That's 49 feet over the ground, mm-hmm. not over the rooftops. And it flies so low that they have to remove the power lines and they have to remove trees. 81 trees at the historic park. 250 trees total. That's how low this thing's flying. They're marketing it as like, enjoy the views, the downtown skyline. That's great. And yet there are privacy issues for the residents. So they're verbally assuring us that they'll take care of us once it's after approval, of course. After it's approved, they're like, we'll negotiate with you, residents, because we're going to install smart glass, which will magically obscure, it'll like make the windows opaque whenever it's passing over residential or next to people's windows. And then it's like, well, how does that work? The opaqueness of the windows kind of goes against the whole, like the promise of amazing views and stuff like that. You know, not to mention the fact that those are just vague assurances that are not included in any of the documents.
So how does Stop the Gondola fight against the gondola?
Well, we've organized with other community groups. So we have a coalition that includes 29 member organizations. And then we have a petition out there. We're trying to share the information with folks and get people in the community and all over really to sign the petition, because this project is marketed as big tourism draw and benefit. So we're going around door to door, also in our neighborhoods, trying to get folks aware of this and to sign our petition and send in letters. Our coalition is also meeting with the Metro board members and their staff. We're briefing them on our concerns. So we're trying to share our message with as many people as possible, including the decision makers.
Can you share some of the obstacles, setbacks, or achievements in your efforts to stop the gondola?
In terms of obstacles and setbacks, I mean, a very recent one, I don't know if I can say it's like anything concrete, but we've been hearing rumors from different people that there have been deals made behind the scenes, promises made to try to get this project approved. And so that was very, very difficult thing to hear. But at the same time, you know, we still believe that this project doesn't make any sense for the intended purpose and for our communities as well. So we're trying to still continue to share that message and to make sure that the decision makers understand that this project, they're going to be responsible for it. It's going to be a very visible project in our neighborhoods. I think in the end, they still need to stand behind any decision they make on this project.
Well, okay, I'm going to preface what I'm about to say by saying that this is proposed as a public-private partnership between Frank McCord's company, LA Art, LA...
I wouldn't say it that way, because the public-private partnership means a specific thing, but it's they literally claim this is qualifies as public transportation, but it would be privately owned. So this process has been very difficult in terms of transparency. It's gone through a very unusual process in Metro, and I think that's been one of the big obstacles, is that this isn't going through the normal public hearing process, where normally you would start out with a feasibility study. If this were a public project that Metro were proposing, they would go out into the community and try to present the idea that they have for, you know, using this technology or building a new transit line. They would try to present it to the community and then get some feedback before they select the routes. And in this case, they, since it was a, it's proposed as privately owned, they went through a different process in Metro, and they were able to do all of that behind the scenes and do selective outreach, which means meeting privately with certain groups to get their ideas. And they've called that feedback, and then they got that feedback and decided on the routes without really having a public discussion about it. So that's been a big obstacle for us, is that this is going through a very unusual process. And there's been a lot of instances where they've had these public meetings and they've been able to shut down public comment. So they've had these public meetings that were in person at Union Station, and the public comment was in the corner behind a curtain where people could go talk to a court reporter, you know, after they went around the room to look at the poster boards to see what the project was. They could go stand behind a curtain and give their public comment. And then on the online meetings, they've had the public comment where you could type into a chat, but no one else could see that comment. And so the people running the meeting, which was Metro and LAR, they could see the questions and kind of censor or selectively choose which questions to read and answer. So it's been a very difficult process in that sense, especially because there haven't been the true public forums to discuss it and to hear everyone's concerns, and to also hold the project proponents, LAR, accountable, you know, to answer the tough questions, like, where's the funding coming from, you know?
And the reason I wanted that to be explained, and better than by me, is because another setback we had was this week, we were expecting the project to be up finally for public discussion at Metro. There was a Wednesday meeting with the Planning and Land Use Committee, and there was a Thursday meeting with the Executive Board. And those are public meetings, and we were expecting to and supposed to be on the agenda for both of those. And when they put out the agendas 72 hours beforehand, they were struck from the agenda. So no public discussion, no discussion amongst the committee members at Metro. And they were going to just push it through to the full board meeting for the big vote without any prior discussion. So we still went, because at the end of all of those meetings, there's a general public comment period where you can talk about an issue that may come before them in the future. So, you know, we still showed up and did what we needed to do, which was really good. But then, so they were going to push off the big vote to the full board meeting, and the agenda just came out. This morning? It's been struck from the agenda. So again, no public discussion, no discussion among Metro board members. We're trying to get all of our supporters organized and everything, because you have to show up and make your voices heard. And so for them to yank the cord on that like that, you know, we're kind of like, what the heck is going on? And who is making this happen, or why? You know, we don't know the answer to that, but it's a lot.
It just sounds really frustrating, because the entire project just sounds very impractical. Like, that just really sounds off. And literally, there's no research put into it.
Yeah, to me, it's like they're trying to brute force the project, like closing out the community insight, not having forums, not letting you guys talk to, I guess, whoever's in charge of the project to make them aware of these complications. You mentioned how they skipped a feasibility study and just went to the environmental study, which was to like how they would actually get the project built. To me, it's like they see the concerns and they don't want you to address them, because you obviously see it and they just don't want everyone else to see it. Yeah, to me, it feels like very shady, almost like a private company.
Yeah, and I think part of it is that, you know, we kind of have been alarmed and felt frustrated, partly also because, you know, we see that they're coming into our communities because they see us as a path of least resistance. They kind of see us as maybe people who won't fight back Or maybe they thought they could buy us out, you know, and they have actually bought a lot of properties in our neighborhood on the other side of our street. So we have like basically the residents on one side of the street and then the other side of the street. They've bought up almost every property except for one, which is my 95-year-old neighbor, who says she just wants to live there until she dies. She doesn't want to sell. Her children can do whatever they want with the building, you know. So it has felt like that, where it felt like a big moneyed interest, big corporations wanting to take advantage of communities that they see as not, maybe not having the resources or the will to fight back against them. So it's been really good to be able to see a lot of like community members and organizations coming and hearing the concerns and then sharing the load and sharing the message and really joining together and to, you know, speak up for ourselves. So it's been great.
I see a lot of your impacts, because like when I walk down the street, I see the billboards down on Broadway that have like Stop the Gondola on them. And I live near Dodger Stadium and I walk through Chinatown to get to school. And when I walk through the neighborhoods, I see in people's fences and on their yards, like the small Stop the Gondola signs just hung there. And it's just, I guess, gotten to my head. Or I guess walking through the neighborhood, I just see your influence in the community.
Oh, yeah. And when you walk by, I'm not sure if it's the same street as the one that has Phoenix Bakery, but somewhere in Chinatown, there's this billboard that's advertising the actual gondola project. And then if you look on the other side of the billboard, it has the advertisement for Stop the Gondola.
So when is this gondola project going to be confirmed, and what would you guys do if it actually gets approved and goes under construction?
So the approvals process is going through Metro right now. We're not sure exactly when they'll put it up to the board vote to approve it. It was supposed to be this Thursday, but now we're not sure. And after that, it still needs to go through several other steps to get additional approvals from, for example, the city of LA, because it would need city land and city airspace, and also California State Parks, because it goes over LA State Historic Park, and I believe Caltrans. So there are other approvals needed. What they're anticipating is to begin construction, I believe, in 2026. And construction would take 2 years, and they want to have this ready for the Olympics in 2028.
If it gets approved, lawsuits.
Yeah, they're
probably
going
to enter into lawsuits. We're still going to try to stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the arguments we have about it, I won't talk about the piecemealing.
This project really doesn't make sense unless there are these plans to develop the Dodger Stadium parking lots into something like LA Live or Dodger Disneyland or something like that. So,
which, guess what, would bring more traffic and parking and congestion into our neighborhoods.
So there's all these huge issues. There's a lot of unanswered questions with this project because, as I said before, they skipped the feasibility study. They went to the environmental review. They did do a lot of studies in the environmental review, but they also made a whole lot of assumptions to do those studies. And a lot of those assumptions were based on things that they probably should have studied a little bit more in the feasibility phase.
The reason I brought up the piecemealing and as part of like there could be lawsuits is because it is known that Frank McCourt has long wanted to develop the parking lots. That plan has a name. It's called Next 50. There are even drawings. Yeah, he's had this plan for a long time, like since he was still the owner, right? So obviously a brand new development up there at the parking lots would have huge impacts on the environment and the neighborhoods and stuff. There was no mention of this development in the final EIR. And under CEQA, it is required to study all of the impacts of a particular project. So this gondola, you know, standing by itself looks like one thing. But this gondola attached to the development of the parking lots is a whole other can of worms. And if you don't include it, that's called piecemealing. You're like separating the different aspects of the project, and that's illegal under CEQA.
This project essentially turns Chinatown into Dodger Stadium's parking lot. So it shifts the parking burdens into our neighborhoods so that the parking lots up at Dodger Stadium can be used for something else, something more lucrative for the people who own the land there. So that's a huge issue. It's a huge issue for the businesses in Chinatown. It's a huge issue for the residents, you know.
So when you first tell people that, oh, it's going to run 365 days a year from 5 to midnight, people are like, why? Why would they do that? But once you tell people he'll probably want to develop the parking lots into this thing, they go, oh, that now it makes sense why it would run that much. Mm-hmm.
So for those who similarly feel frustrated about this gondola project and want to actively support Stop the Gondola, how could they get involved and contribute to your initiative?
The petition signatures here really, really do matter. Assuming the politicians are working for us, you know, if they feel they can see all the problems in the EIR, but if the community doesn't speak out, then they can't just stand up and be like, I'm against this project. They have to have the backing of the community. So if we sign the petition, if we send letters, that's the backing that they need to help support them to know that we've got their back. If they're going to stand up and say, I'm against this, which is probably not an easy thing to do when you're dealing with money and politics, you know? So that's one way the community really shows that. Unfortunately, the petition is really wonky on our website right now, but if anyone's gonna try to do the online petition, you have to fill it out, hit submit, scroll up, get through the reCAPTCHA, and get your email confirmation. But we have paper petitions, and you know, there's only so many of us, so we can't get out to everyone, unfortunately. But we have been having a table set up every Thursday at the farmers market, the one here at the LA State Historic Park. So that's one place you can go.
Our website is stopthegondola.org. And you can also follow us on social media. All of our social media is Stop the Gondola. We're hosting different events to get folks together, to rally together, learn how to get involved, and to make posters where we're sharing more information about the project with folks.
Share the information, share the petition with your people and get them to sign. And you can write letters to the Metro Board. The email is boardclerk@metro.net. And you can write letters, and they don't have to be long. It can just be, you know, I live in Los Angeles and this sounds really horrible. Please oppose the gondola project. You know, I live in Chinatown. Please oppose the gondola. Mm-hmm. And for whoever's really into it, which we hope is everyone, they can, once we find out when the public vote and discussion is actually happening, we're showing up and we're making public comment. You can do it in person at the Metro meetings, or you can do it over the phone as well.
Well, everyone, this concludes our interview with Phyllis and Tani Ling from Stop the Gondola.
We would like to thank them for their advocacy.
We'd like to thank them for joining us on this podcast. Once again, my name is Caleb Leong.
My name is Mr. Choi.
My name is Malia Mahalana Jamakarn.
We're here with ConnectaPod and Los Angeles Public Library. Signing out. Goodbye.